This audio recording is of Chapter 8, yes, from the book Spiritual Connection in Daily Life by Lynn Underwood, read by the author and recorded in July of 2018. I'm getting ready to try to do the whole book in audio format, and as I was practicing and getting ready for it, I had a chapter that I had done, and I thought, well, I'll put it up on the web for people to listen to it, while the more professional recording is in process. The beginning of the book that I'm not including here describes the 16 daily spiritual experience scale questions that have been used in over 300 studies and translated into 30 languages, and I invite the reader to explore each of the questions themselves and also read about the various places and ways other people find these in their days. Another part of the book describes some of the research results, showing how having more of these ordinary experiences predict many good things in life, particularly for those in tough times. The middle section of the book describes four main themes found in the experiences and highlights some ways we might find more of them in our lives. In the book, there are places to write, and this is not really possible when I'm doing an audiobook. I'm going to leave a small space after my questions to you and hope that you can reflect on those as you listen to this. I suggest that you pause the recording at that stage and really take a moment to do that. I'll leave a small space, but it's not going to be enough for you to do that. So I'll continue on with this chapter, and this explores one of the themes that's in the middle section of the book. The epigraph for this chapter is, "Hope is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense regardless of how it turns out." And this is by Vaclav Havel, Czech president and playwright. Life is messy. I find myself wanting to be somewhere else, be someone else, but my particular life, my particular personality is what I have. And that's good. Not that I can't actively make some changes and shape some results. I do some of that. But in the midst of it all, this life is where I am, and I am who I am. Now is messy, but each moment, me, here, now, is in its own way exactly right. So many things push us away from being fully in each moment. Advertisements present us with a shiny life we're supposed to aspire to, encouraging us to inhabit the future. The future ends up being more vivid than the present. Yet the present moment is where we are and where we act, where we can affirm our lives or deny them. And you, where are you? Think of a map with the "you are here" mark. Each of us is in the midst of a wild life. It can sometimes seem like we're holding a tiger by the tail. Fundamental acceptance of where you are in life right now can give you a peaceful place to start from, and a very practical one too. A secure footing to take the next step. In the story, The Finest Music, from a collection of Celtic legends gathered together by James Stevens, a group of men are debating about what the finest music in the world is. Some suggest that it's laughter. One suggests birdsong. One, the ring of a spear on a shield. Another, the whisper of one who is moved. And so on. When the chief, Finn, is finally asked, he says, "It's the music of what happens." Something about this story brings tears to my eyes. The finest music in the world is happening all around me, and I miss it. Egad, life does not seem perfect. It does not seem ideal. But in the midst of it all, in the midst of the messiness and troubles, we can look for beauty, light, eternity, and sense a smile surfacing from deep within. The Daily Spiritual Experience Scale questions you might expect to be particularly representative of this theme are the one on deep inner peace, asking about being thankful for your blessings, asking about accepting others and yourself, the one on being spiritually touched by the beauty of creation. But this theme may also be reflected in the frequency of other DSES items in less direct but still potent ways, such as the connection to all of life question. General feelings of connection to, closeness with, and support from the divine can also contribute to this. It may be good to return to your written answers on the questions from earlier in the book to find specific times and ways that you say yes. It may be useful to revisit these questions with this theme in mind. Or if this is something you would like to follow over time, you could pay specific attention to how often you experience these items in your life and watch how your responses change over time as you pay attention to this. We cannot see the future. Something may not seem to be working out in the short run, but may lead to all sorts of marvelous outcomes, some of which we will never see ourselves. I want to sense that things are good, right, okay. I look at my life and I find myself wondering, what is going on here? I want things to be smooth. I want to know what's coming down the pike. But none of us can see the future. The Indian Jesuit teacher and writer Anthony de Mello tells an old Chinese story. A farmer's old horse is needed for his farm, but escapes into the hills. The neighbors all sympathize with him about his bad fortune, but the farmer replies, "Bad luck? Good luck? Who knows?" Then, when his son is trying to tame one of the wild horses to replace the one that escaped, the son falls and breaks his leg. Again, the neighbors express sympathy about bad luck, but he says, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" A few weeks later, the army comes to the village and conscripts all the able-bodied youth, but not the farmer's son because of his broken leg. De Mello asks, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" Saying yes to life is not the same as blind optimism or a smile plastered over the top of everything. It is seeing the world in a larger context. Einstein said that the most important question is the universe friendly? Of course, awful things happen. Can we still say yes to life going forward fully alive? A researcher on the Daily Spiritual Experience Scale, the DSES, sent me a cartoon showing two creatures squashed in a glass filled with water. One has his head up, the other is facing down. The one can breathe, the other can't. Yet they are in the same glass. It's often our orientation to the situation that is the problem. Take a moment to reflect on one or two unpleasant events in your life. Can you see any way that they might end up being for the best in the big picture? Can you think of any good that might come of them? Sometimes we don't see any way good can come from bad, but we just do not know what the future has in store. Can you relax into the mystery of the unknown? What helps you to keep your head out of the water? Yes to the past. Saying yes to your life is not only about the present circumstances. I know I can be sucked into regrets about the past, and they can drag down my daily life. Many say that mindfulness, living in the present moment, provides the best way to approach the world. I think mindfulness is a good idea. We do not give adequate attention to the present as it unfolds. But the past colors our present and shapes how we see the world. So coming to terms with the past is also an important part of saying yes to life now. Dag Hammarskjöld, former Secretary General of the United Nations, wrote, "For all that has been, thank you. For all that is to come, yes." The artist Richard Tipping makes humorous road signs, which were exhibited at the Tate Modern Museum in London. One of them reads, "Wrong day, go back." Sometimes it feels like that. But we didn't take a turn somewhere that has led us to the wrong day. I saw reruns of a television series from the 90s called Journeyman. When the hero, a newspaper reporter, goes back in time, he's kind of commissioned to change some things in the past to make life better in the future in many ways. He's also tempted to correct other things, like the death of someone in an accident. But when he returns to the future, his present, he can see how the things he thought would be good to change, but that he wasn't commissioned to do, would have caused serious problems down the line, affecting the course of relationships and history in major negative ways. We do not have a bird's-eye view of time. From our point of view, we see things that look awful. But to change those could mean other things would have to change too. And that might not be so great. It is often beyond our imagination to see the unfolding of the world if we just changed one thing. Take a moment to reflect on a few events in your past that seemed bad at the time, or just pick one. Can you think of any good things that have resulted from this? Were some good things buried in hardship or suffering? And are there good things you would have missed out on if the unpleasant things had not happened? When we say yes to the past and yes to our present circumstances, we look toward the future with hope in the context of a greater meaning. And we are seeing eternity present now. like you to take a moment to do an exercise that I mentioned earlier in the book and elaborate on a little more there, called the examination of consciousness. And it's kind of an adaptation of an ancient approach to this reflection. First, take some time to relax slowly from beginning to end. Look at yesterday closely as if you were rerunning a video taken from your own perspective. Pay attention to the events of the day in light of looking for blessings. Things you might have appreciated, but missed somehow. Did you discover any blessings that you missed at the time? Were there things you appreciated more when you did this exercise? Write down some of this experience, or just reflect on it in your mind. What was it like? Happiness. Happiness can be defined in so many ways. Some definitions are trite or fluffy. Some definitions are deep and satisfying. Philosophers such as Aristotle have defined happiness, or what they call eudaimonia, as activity in accord with excellence. And they have seen it as the highest human good. Entire scientific journals are devoted to research on happiness. Everyone seems to want it. But defining it is not easy. There are questionnaires that try to assess happiness. For example, people are asked, "How happy are you?" And they respond on a scale of "as happy as I can possibly be" to "very unhappy." Other more complicated scales kind of list different categories. We all want to be happy. But it's elusive to measure. You can be flourishing as a person and contributing to the flourishing of the people you relate to without smiling or being jolly. You can be deeply satisfied with life even if your life circumstances are awful. So judging yourself, your life, on the basis of a more superficial kind of happiness is probably not the best way to go. Janine Roth wrote in the book, Women, Food, and God, "I've been miserable standing in a field of 1,000 sunflowers in southern France in mid-June, and I've been happy sitting with my dying father, happy being a switchboard operator." An Irish radio program in 1981 interviewed a variety of people about what makes them happy. They shared things as diverse as being around children, performing music in front of small groups, and even when they thought they were dying. As you read about research on happiness, it's important to consider that there are many different definitions. Other social science research is illuminating in this regard. The social scientist Philip Brickman compared people winning the lottery with a group of matched controls and found that the lottery winners were not any happier a few years later compared with the control group and took significantly less pleasure from a series of small happy events in their lives. And studies have shown that the small positive events in the day, rather than the presence of negative feelings, end up predicting how we feel about our days when we reflect back on them. your daily spiritual experiences can be some of those small positive events. Happiness is complicated. I met Vaclav Havel once in the corridors of the Library of Congress. The encounter encouraged me to read more of his writings. The quote on hope at the beginning of this chapter exemplifies his positive yet pragmatic stance as president of the Czech Republic following its release from Russian control. Hope as the certainty that things make sense no matter how they look on the surface. I remember my youngest daughter saying about herself at age 12, "My life is perfect." I was amazed, especially in the context of the sincerity with which she expressed it. I could see all sorts of things about the world around her, her life, especially things I felt responsible for, that I would have changed to improve her life. To hear her comment was liberating for me as a mother. It let me off the hook in a lovely way and made me see things differently. Evelyn Underhill, a very practical writer on the spiritual life, who wrote in the early 20th century, said, "With this widening of the horizon, our personal ups and downs, desires, cravings, efforts, are seen in scale. As small and transitory spiritual facts within a vast, abiding spiritual world. And lit by a steady spiritual light. And at once a new coherence comes into our existence, a new tranquility and release. Like a chalet in the Alps, that homely existence gains atmosphere, dignity, significance from the greatness of the sky above it and the background of the everlasting hills." Take a moment to reflect on your notion of happiness. Does everything have to be perfect at a superficial level for you to be happy? Have you ever been happy in the midst of times that might be described from the outside as being full of problems or that seemed less than ideal in many ways? Reflect on how happiness may have been there for you in these situations. It may be something that's going on in your life right now. That would be something you could reflect on here too. Irritations, frustrations, and distress. Sometimes the daily grind seriously gets in the way of saying yes. We want to do things and it doesn't work out, or things don't go as quickly as we'd like. An aging body or illness gets in the way of doing things we want to do. G.K. Chesterton said in his essay on running after one's hat, "An adventure is only an inconvenience, rightly considered. An inconvenience is only an adventure, wrongly considered." It's not so much the irritating events that happen as how we view them and weigh our feelings when the moment of irritation comes. Do we get dragged along by irritation? Or do we take a wider or more humorous view? When my computer gives me grief, I do not automatically have this wonderful approach to life. But I can definitely see where I could use this attitude. Many of the experiences in the DSES can provide me with fuel for this. And it is not just the minor irritations, like getting a head cold at an inconvenient time. More serious and traumatic things happen to us too, and these challenge our ability to say yes even more. The psychologist William James wrote at the beginning of the 20th century, "I accept the universe" is reported to have been a favorite utterance of the New England Transcendentalists. And when someone repeated this phrase to Thomas Carlyle, his sardonic comment is said to have been, "Gad, she'd better." At bottom, the whole concern of both morality and religion is with the manner of our acceptance of the universe. Do we accept it only in part and grudgingly, or heartily and altogether? Are our protests against certain things in it radical and unforgiving? Or should we think that, even with evil, there are ways of living that must lead to good? If we accept the whole, should we do it as if stunned into submission? Or shall we do so with enthusiastic assent? What James describes here is not a jolly, rose-colored glasses approach that denies that bad things happen and that they cause us pain and distress. Rather, he's saying that a change of framing can affect how we feel when these things happen. In a book I co-edited on measuring stress, we noted that a crucial part of the stress response is how we interpret events that happen in our lives. That is, what they mean to us. An area of study in psychology looks at post-traumatic growth. Some of the studies in Chapter 5 linked more frequent daily spiritual experiences with greater resiliency and more post-traumatic growth. Post-traumatic growth extends beyond resiliency. Some people not only bounce back from bad circumstances, but actually grow in all sorts of ways. Eventually, all of us will encounter difficulties ranging from minor to major. The resources represented in many of the daily spiritual experience scale questions can help us to be more resilient and grow through challenge in the midst of traumas. It is important to restate that bad things do happen. People suffer. Things hurt. We are talking here about our overall approach to life, how we react to the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, rather than denying our pain or the pain of others. You are who you are. A vital part of saying yes is being who you are. What kind of person are you? Even if you might want to change some things about you, can you, quote, accept yourself even though you do things you think are wrong? Referring to one of the DSES questions. Not accepting yourself may create a barrier to accepting others. It can stop love from flowing in your life and get in the way of expressing who you are in vital ways. Being willing to be who you are is important for so many things. To be loved, you need to be in your own shoes to be there. To be in a good relationship with someone else, you need to be wearing your shoes, not pretending to be someone else. No truth, no relationship, said a wise friend of mine. If I am not who I am, there is no way that I can genuinely connect with another. Are you content with who you are, even if you see things you would like to change? Can you be merciful with yourself when you think things that you do are wrong or when you make mistakes? Can you cheer yourself on in the tough times and applaud your successes? Take a moment to list some of the good things about the kind of person you are. Final section in the chapter is entitled The Balance Between Accepting and Engaging. For me, in each moment of the day, there are a number of buttons, but two of them are, number one, escape and avoid, and the second is say yes. When I say yes to each moment, I breathe out. Saying yes to what is going on now, to who you are, limits and all, enables you to make a difference in active ways that build on a deeper ground. You are the person you are in the situation you're in, and that is good. Escape means being less alive. I watched a talk and performance by Evelyn Glennie, the deaf percussionist. She demonstrated how when we are loose while playing the marimba, the tone is flowing, and when we tighten up, it takes more energy and doesn't sound as good. Accepting who we are and the situation we are in allows for that loosening up that enables us to create beautiful music. When the actress Whoopi Goldberg was asked, "What has been the most spiritual experience of your life?" she said, "Really coming to terms with the fact that there are things in the world that you can't control, fix, or stop." This is not passivity, but an attitude informed by all will be well. We can actively say a participative yes to life. Can we say yes even when we do not understand? We can still act, make a difference. We are potent. It's just that we can't control it all. Life is life with its joys and sorrows and richness. It is what it is. It is not easy to balance my desires and aspirations for myself and the world with acceptance of how I am and how others are. A friend once said to me that I am a make-it-happen kind of person. This has its upside for sure, but I also need to be okay with things as they are, with me as I am, with people as they are, so that I can step out from that solid, quiet place of acceptance. Wendell Berry's poem, A Spiritual Journey tells of how we are on a world-discovering journey, not of miles, but inches. For him, the goal is to understand with humility and joy that where we are right now is home.